From our family to your family, this is A Legacy of Faith, the podcast.
Welcome to A Legacy of Faith, a podcast designed to help your family survive the day, plan for tomorrow, and always keep an eye on eternity. We're glad that you've joined us for an episode that, Leah, is 99 episodes away from episode number 200.
This is going to be a long countdown.
Yeah, let the countdown begin. No, we appreciate it. We actually got a couple of messages, you know, people on Facebook saying congratulations, I'm reaching episode 100, and we really appreciate that, but we're not done. We're forging on, and lots of good things going on, and Leah, it's kind of strange. We are recording this episode within about the first, three or four hours that you and I have seen each other all week.
Yes, I've been a single mother for a few days.
Yeah, I've been in Missouri holding a gospel meeting, left last Saturday, and recording this Thursday. It's either late afternoon or early evening, depending on how you want to define this time of day. We got back around lunchtime, but the meeting went well. We're in southeast Missouri. And I was just thinking a few minutes ago, right before we started recording this, Loyola Chicago won an NCAA tournament game. It's obviously because I went to a state that's associated with the Missouri Valley Conference.
You brought good luck.
That's exactly what happened. I mean, there's really no other explanation for it.
That time of year, folks.
Hashtag March.
Mm-hmm. Madness.
Yeah, it's the only sporting event that really matters. I have to say, and I don't do sports on social media and stuff because people get all upset. But I do have to say, it is hilarious to watch people who never watch college basketball. You know, college football is the greatest sport, baseball is the greatest sport, and everything. And they tweet 5,000 times a day during the NCAA tournament about the tournament. I'm going, if this is not the greatest sporting event, what are you talking about? What, you know? Go to work. You know, it's the middle of the day. What are you doing? Tweeting about basketball. If it's not exciting, what are you doing? But it's great. But we have had other stuff going on around here. Lights of Leaders are coming up soon. Bye. And the kids have been getting ready for that.
Yeah.
And I hope, since I've been going, I hope they've been, I know they have. They've been practicing speeches and things at night. And they're song leading. And there's all kinds of stuff going on. And that's coming up in just, two or three weeks, I guess, now. Which means we may have to figure our recording schedule for that particular week, because we scheduled to come out with the podcast the week we're at Lights to Leaders, which means our listenership may be like zero.
That's so true.
We may have to rework the schedule a little bit leading up to that. But the kids are doing well, and it's always an exciting time of year. The kids get, now is when they really start getting excited. This coming Sunday night is when the boys will lead singing, and the girls will do theirs for the ladies and things. And that's when they seem to really kind of kick it in high gear and be really excited about it. And I think it's kind of neat that we're doing ours with a week between. And so they really have time to kind of ramp up and say, like, let's do it Sunday, let's do it Friday, and we're finished.
Right. Well, and it helps you know that you've got to be getting ready ahead of time, Mm-hmm. It's better because I'm procrastinator or things like that, and it just makes you feel like you need to push them a little bit earlier to really work, and then that would be good for the meeting being a week early when we practice for the congregation.
They've been working for a long time on speeches and things, and if your kids are involved in Lights to Leaders, we hope they do well, and the main thing, as we always say, is it's cool when they win the trophies and the medals and stuff, but the best thing is just seeing them improve year over year, and just their excitement. It's fun. It's a tiring thing, but it really is one of those things that when you're up there and seeing all these kids of all ages that excited, it's encouraging, and we look forward to it. It's one of those things we kind of look forward to it more once we're there than actually leading up to it, because we have to pack and stuff. The kids just get to go, but it's exciting. All right, a couple things we want to talk about, or at least one thing we want to talk about. It kind of depends on how long it takes us to get through the first subject. We're kind of getting back to our flow here of let's talk about things Leah has shared on social media in the last several weeks. We kind of took a break from that over the last couple of episodes to talk about some Bible school program things. But you shared an article a week ago or so now, a couple of weeks now, I guess, ago. And it's from a blog we haven't talked about on the podcast in a long time. We Are That Family. But the lady who runs it, Kristen, has kind of broken out and has a page just for herself, I think is kind of the way this works now, because hers is kind of the top name on the page. But the name of the article was Raising Your Kids to Go Against the Flow. And I kind of ask you the usual question here, just in a general way, why did you, you know, what stood out about this article? And we'll kind of get to some specific stuff about how this kind of fits in with a lot of the things we believe as far as parenting, Christian parenting, and so forth.
I think it's because our own kids are getting to the age where you start seeing a difference sometimes, or at least you start thinking about it more. When they're little, most little kids are the same, and you have the same little struggles here and there, diapers, potty training.
Thankfully, ours are past that.
Feeding times and things like that, yeah. And then growing and being sick and things like that sometimes. But I don't know. Then I kind of feel like we're in that part of parenting now where the shift is there. Where
we're in that tween section.
Yes, the tweens where, you know, you're not just taking care of kids and keeping them alive through the day, like what everybody jokes about, but you're actually training them to be adults. And so...
Well, and their little personalities, right, are always there, but now you're starting to see them use those personalities to gravitate towards things that are more serious in good ways and bad, mm-hmm, ways. It can be a good thing, you know, that... And
you're right, the personalities are there, and that also means that you see them getting hurt more from things outside your family, and it makes it more noticeable when you see those things maybe that they're upset or hurt about that really indirectly, at least, and sometimes directly, is a result of the way you're raising them, mm-hmm, if that makes sense. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I'm jumbling this up. But just that, and so the title caught me because really, you know, if you're Christians, we always say we're going to be different, and so our kids will be different from other kids, and so that's what kind of got me hooked, and I read it, and I thought, you know, this is worth sharing.
And she talks about in the article that it really does seem to be ingrained, not just in kids, but just in people, to want to fit in.
Right.
That you're almost... in a good way, a Christian way, almost rewiring your children. But we have to be rewired first. Like you said, mm-hmm, Christians are going to be different, you know, if we're living the right way and following Scripture. But, you know, we really are at that age where we're starting to see our kids. And, you know, and it's not that big of a deal, you know, partially because we homeschool them. You know, they're not around kids all day long, you know, and seeing the latest fashion trends all day long and that sort of thing. But we are starting to see just this pull towards, do I want to be like the group, or am I going to be me?
Mm-hmm.
And for most people, the pull is, I want to be like the group, because it's a whole lot easier. Yeah. And it's not a matter, I mean, it is a matter of right and wrong in some cases. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's just a matter of, it's just easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the point of this article really is, let's have them do the thing that's harder, whether it's a right or wrong thing, or whether it's just an easy, hard thing, because they are made to be them. They're not made to be just part of this mass of humanity.
It's good character training for them to say, you don't have to do what everyone else is doing, because if you spend your growing up years and that's how you operate, then you never develop your own mind and decide it's okay if I think something that's different than everyone else, you mm-hmm know. I mean, you can do that too much. I don't think anyone really cares for those people who are always trying to it's not necessarily a good thing to always be trying to think outside the box, because yeah, sometimes that's just annoying, right? Yeah. To your friends, yeah, you're like, you know, it's okay to
the sky,
whatever.
The
you
sky
know
is blue,
right?
Well, actually,
right. That's like, what I'm saying. Right. You know, yeah, really, just it's okay sometimes just to do what everybody else does, the traditional thing, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a traditional kind of gal. Mm-hmm. I don't care if I don't know why it's always been done that way. If it's been done that way, it's okay. You know, yeah, that's a good thing sometimes.
And but we're living in a society, too, where that's going against the flow.
Where
you're holding to whatever you want to call them, old school traditions or just traditional things. You know, well, we don't want tradition in our society. We don't want patterns.
Right.
We don't want, well, sometimes you're like, you know, traditions are okay in some cases.
Right.
Patterns are okay.
Right.
Let's take this to the Bible, right?
Right.
Why is there so many problems in the Lord's church? It's because people don't want to hold the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
That's just old-fashioned stuff. And so even holding to those biblical traditions, mm-hmm, is going against the flow.
And that might be okay sometimes if it's if it is just a, you know, matters of opinion, but also if it's you're trying to teach your kids that, you know, you're always trying to think of something different to do, that can also breed, is disunity a word? That's not even a word.
I think it is now.
What word? Not being unified?
I think it actually is disunity. I don't know. But if it wasn't before,
yeah,
it is
I'm
now.
I'm tired. And so, but, you know, so I think it, the idea is to try to find the balance of, you want your kids to go against the flow when it matters and to teach them that it's okay to go against the flow, but we're not necessarily saying that your job as a parent is to tell your kid that they can, that they ought to always be different as far as just to be different. I mean, that's silly. I mean, it is silly.
Where she takes her article, and we'll kind of drill down here for a few minutes, is more just those things that are just kind of trendy. Everybody else is doing it, and so your kid just feels like they have to go along with it. Everybody's seeing this movie, or everybody has a whatever, or everybody's wearing these clothes, you know, this line of clothes, that sort of thing. And again, I think even for adults, a lot of times, I mean, why are there advertisements for adults? Right? It's because we want to think, well, if I have that, I'm like everybody else, and that makes me okay. But for kids, especially, when they see children their own age, and it really does, in their little mind, seem like everybody else is, you know, going to see this, doing this, wearing this, then it's hard to show them that, you know, for one thing, not everybody is, but it's also okay if everybody isn't. And she's talking about more of those just daily decision kind of things. And that's where she kind of drills down in the article. And that's where we kind of want to come to this, is just those, what seem like minor decisions in a lot of ways, but in reality, they're not.
Right. And she speaks, I think, it's been a while since I read this. I'm trying to read down through. But she speaks to things about, like, if you are going to teach your children about modesty, that's going to go against the flow, and that they're not going to be able to be fitting in our society if we hold to that. And and also, you know, just the things that they might watch on television, if you raise them to go against the flow in that we don't watch that in our family, well, then that's going to hurt them sometimes. That's going to, they're going to look different, you know, and so why would we be surprised? And I tell you what, to me, what is hard at this point is, you know, deep down in your heart that you need to teach your kids, you know, morals and values, and those morals and values aren't always, and more aren't what's popular in society. And you know you've made that choice. She makes this point too. But when you've made that choice that this is our family and we are Christians, we follow the Bible, and that this is how we act, and it's going to go against the flow of modern society, so to speak. But you've made that choice. When your kids are up to the age where it really matters to them, you've made that choice for them. I mean, you know, they're not... where, you know, you're going to come across times where you're going to have to just say, no, you're not going to do that to the kid. Or you've trained them while they're little, and all of a sudden they're facing that, you know, this is not as easy as as it looks. You know, maybe people might say something to me about this, and it's not mom telling me good job on being kind or whatever. And sometimes people are going to look at you and tell you you're a pushover or something, you know. And so I think that was important.
You know, she mentions as she's going through some of these decisions, she talks, I'm not going to list all of them, but she mentions, like, it's the first time your son asks his friends if they can play a less violent video game. It's that sort of thing she's talking about, you know, when you see that it's becoming part of them instead of you just making them. But you kind of hinted at something there when you were talking, that hopefully, and this is hard to communicate to kids, you know, but it's one of those things that you may not say specifically every time, but hopefully it's part of just the fabric of the conversation of your family. Is let's just use example of something to watch on television. It's not always just, we're not going to watch that because we just don't watch that. There has to be an explanation over time of why, you know, because if we just say, well, we're just not going to watch that, your kids are going to think, well, they just don't like the show.
Mm-hmm.
But and you don't have to explain it every single time you turn an episode of whatever TV show off, or flip past it in the hotel room, or you know the whatever the situation happens to be. But over time, the conversation has to be, you know, we don't watch that because they use language we would never use as Christians, or mm-hmm. we don't watch that show because, you know, honey, the girls in that show just don't know how to dress modestly. Yeah, and it's those mm-hmm. sorts of things that over time has to become like a. And is that the wording? Does that make sense? Kind of the fabric of the communication. Mm-hmm. You know, there has to be a why attached to it, or it's that's just mom and dad's decision, or they just don't like that show, or they just don't like that video game, or you know, they just don't like going to movies, mm-hmm. or whatever the situation happens to be.
Right. I mean, we just need to be speaking the words and actually teaching, instead of just thinking they're going to pick it all up just on their own. Yeah, I don't think, you know, I think for families that are trying over and over to question everything they do and line it up with God's will and not go with the flow of just because their friends are doing something or watching something. And if a family, if a mom and a dad are making those choices, then eventually the kids, I think, start to learn that's who our family is anyway. And I think it's, you know, it's okay, as long, like you're saying, as long as you're not just, you need to let them know you're not doing it just to be, I don't know what a polite word would be, but not just to be in your face about, mm-hmm. well, I don't have to do what everybody else is doing, you know. Right. I mean, because we don't really, that's really not the right attitude
to have
anyway. You're
not just to be contrarian.
Yes, contrary is the word, actually, yes. And so, but, you know, to make sure you are telling them why, and those are, you know, obviously we talk so much about having family devotionals and just communicating and spending time together, and those are where those things come out. But eventually, though, I think the kids will start to have this feeling and strength that this is okay, because they're not going to be blind to it for so long. They're going to see that, you know, maybe mom and dad do things differently, and they won't notice that when they're little, but as they get bigger, they do. And you have to maybe sometimes break it to them that, you know, we don't always do what everybody else is doing, and tell them why. Like you say, just be honest and say, this is why, and make sure you know why. But I just wish that people had more strength. And I don't understand this. And maybe it's because my parents raised us to go against the flow. We mm-hmm. were always doing something a little bit different, you know, when it came to school functions that we didn't participate in. I mean, our life, we were raised that this is, you know, how we dressed from an early age was always scrutinized as whether this is appropriate or not. And it didn't matter one little bit if the other girls were wearing their shorter. I mean, that never came into the conversation.
Right.
And what places we went, what we were involved in, like I say, functions at school, even big or little, that we had to literally...
Let's just say we didn't go to prom.
We didn't go to the prom, and we didn't do the square dances, when, you know. And even as a young kid, when it might not have been like anything sexual, of course, you know, but just it was ingrained into my mind that, you know, being a Christian in this world will mean you're a little different. And I remember I had a brother who's 8 years older than me, so we weren't contemporary, so to speak, in school and everything. But I remember when I got ready to go to high school, flat out looked me in the face and just uttered the words that I think almost every parent needs to utter to their family or to their children. He said, Lee, I want you to know you're going to start school, and if you are who you're supposed to be and you are being a Christian, you will never be the most popular girl.
Mm-hmm.
And he just left it right there. That was the ultimate mic drop. Never didn't make excuses. You won't be the most popular girl. And I wasn't. But even...
You were the prettiest girl.
Oof, no, I really wasn't. But our whole family culture growing up was that of, we're going to do the right thing, and it's not always going to be popular. You know, and I had preachers preaching that. And I think we need more of that. Preachers and youth ministers saying, you know what? You're going to be different. And sometimes you being a Christian is not... It's not going to put you on everyone's favorite list. And I think sometimes we do our kids a disservice because we want them to be involved and to be lights in the world. But we sometimes don't mention this to them that if you are being a light in the world is not that everyone's going to look up and admire you. And you can't read through the New Testament and tell your try to convince yourselves that being a Christian is going to be somebody that the world in general, that they're going to be appreciated for it, because I just don't see that in the New Testament.
Well, being a light oftentimes means you're the light in a very dark place.
And that's usually what makes people irritated with you, mm-hmm. is that your light is showing how dark their life can be or mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, let's just be honest. I think that's what bothers people about the people who go against the flow and stand up and say, we're not going to do that. That if you're a light, if you're really a light, it's going to irritate some people because they're not going to be happy with what they see in their life. There's a right way to do it. And, you know, you got to be careful not to be hateful and...
Or even prideful about
prideful
it.
But
I mean, to kind of use the biblical idea, you don't want to be pharisaical. You know, you don't want to be like, I'm better than you are. But it's just, I just want to be light. I want to go against the flow. One of the things I like that... coming back to the article that she does that I really appreciate is that she's drawing the article to a close. She kind of writes to, she writes it to her own children, but it's directed towards the children who actually do go against the flow, or she calls them our upstream children. And the point she tries to make in that little, it's almost like a little letter, you know, almost mini blog post just to the kids, the children, is that when you make those decisions that go against the flow, that God sees that. And she's writing that, and I want to go to that because sometimes I think we teach our children to be scared of the fact that God sees you, and that's good in some ways. You know, it keeps you from doing bad stuff, but there's also a really encouraging side to God seeing our actions when we make the right decision. When mm-hmm. we decide to walk out of that movie, or you know, your kids are over at somebody's house, and like the example we mentioned earlier, she uses, you know, some of the boys are playing a really violent video game, and your son's the one that says, could we just play Super Mario Brothers, which I know nobody plays anymore, but, you know, could we just play something less violent? Or, you know, God sees that. And, you know, the Bible makes it so clear, especially the New Testament makes it so clear, that whether we are honored for that here on earth, that in some way God honors that. And, you know, that's hard to get in a child's mind, you know, that God honors it. But I do think you can get in a child's mind that God sees it and God remembers it. And that needs to be built into your children, that, you know, when they're... you know, when they're 16, 17, or our kids' age, they're tweens, you know, and maybe it's an evening you and I are, you know, recording a podcast, for example, and maybe the kids are watching TV, you know, for those few moments, and something comes on, it's questionable, and they turn the channel. God sees that. And I want to encourage parents to, you know, yes, teach children that God sees when we do things that are wrong, but to use the, you know, to utilize the encouraging side of God seeing things, too, that when you, you know, nobody else knew that you were the one that stood up to the bully at school, or nobody else knew that you walked out of that party, or nobody else knew when, you know, she used an example in there, you know, some boys at school show your son pornography on the phone and he walks away. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody else sees that, but God does, and God honors that in certain ways. And if nothing else, I think God honors that in the fact that that child's backbone gets a little stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a beautiful thing. And so I love that she includes that to encourage the children, not just the parents, that right. God sees and God honors that.
I agree.
Well, good. All right. I was going to look at one thing here. One way that children can go upstream, how's that for a segue? We'll use this one very briefly, is a second article. We're going to mention this just for a few moments. It comes from a website we've used several times on the podcast. Your Mom Has a Blog. This came out a few days later than the other article, and it's called "You Don't Have to Give Your Kid a Phone." That's the perfect reaction, right? You don't have to give your kid your phone. And we want people to read the article, but I want to read just the first couple of sentences, because what you just did is how the article starts. This lady, her name's Melissa, she quotes herself. The first line of the blog article is something she said. She said, "My daughter is 13 years old, and she doesn't have a cell phone." And after that quotation, she writes this sentence: "I said those words from the platform at a women's event and was surprised at the sharp intake of breath all over the room." So what you just did is actually what people did when she actually said her daughter is 13 and didn't actually have her own cell phone. And the point she tries to make throughout this article is stuff we've mentioned on the podcast, but I wanted to tie it to this whole conversation of going against the flow.
Well, can I stop you before?
Sure, go ahead.
That goes along with what, right at the end of that first paragraph, she says, you know, there was this sadness who was like, you can do that? And she says, why, yes. Yes, you can. You know, like, of course you can. You're yes. the parent. You can just say you're not going to have a phone.
That's right.
You know, like, it's okay for you to say that.
That's right. But the reason we want to point people towards this article is that she takes a look at some reasons why, you know, use it, you know, why you can say no, but also in some ways maybe why you should say no. And we've said this on the podcast, I don't know how many times, 4 or 5 times at least, that we are not saying this is a one-size-fits-all policy kind of thing. There's no Bible verse that says what age a child should get a cell phone or what, you know, situation in life a child should get a cell phone. But her list of reasons to, you know, kind of double back and think, okay, is this really a wise idea, is, in my opinion, one of the best I've seen. It's only, I think, 4 items, but it's brilliant.
And part of why we do talk about this a lot is that we're just in this right now with our parenting game because we are making decisions and, you know, parting the waters and trying to see what we need to see about things so we can be informed enough to make a good decision for our family too. And so we want to talk about it a lot because I know this is a big choice that so many families are having to, they're having to make these same choices. Mm-hmm. So that's why we want to talk about it.
Let me take just a moment. And we want people to read the article, but so without reading her explanation, let me just give people the 4 reasons that she gives as to why that she and her husband have decided, she says, to delay our kids' access to phones. But here are the 4 reasons, and we can kind of just use them as a jumping off point. Number one, she says, the internet is a huge world full of strangers who can step into your home without your invitation. But now listen to number 2. The internet is a big world of people your child knows who can step into your home without your invitation. Those 2 sections are worth reading the article. Mm-hmm. Just trust me. Number 3, she says the internet encourages kids to brand themselves. And then 4 is the one you would probably think of first if you were writing the article or I write the article. The internet is where porn lives. That's where we usually, our mind usually goes to, is kind of the big fear of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want people to read the article for her explanations behind those, but especially those first 2. You know, so many parents are afraid of strangers getting access to their kids through social media, chat rooms, you know, apps that you encourage all kinds of weird stuff. But then to turn that right back around and say the internet is a big world of people your child knows. Who can, in other words, everybody else can take over your child's time and attention and effort and energy and no telling what else.
And they can't get away from it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, don't adults feel that way?
Exactly.
That all these smartphones seem really smart until you can't put it down and get away.
Mm-hmm.
Until you can't go to the grocery store without it and know that somebody's trying to call you even when you're trying to get away, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the, I don't want to use the word epidemic.
Privacy and just...
I don't want to use the word epidemic because I haven't done, you know, research into the studies or anything, but the problem of, you know, kids getting text messages at 1, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning every single night and feeling like they have to respond to them. They hear it. It's like, that's a problem. There's no other way.
Yeah.
I don't know what the level of it is. I don't know what the statistics are. But if it's once, it's a problem. You know, I keep my cell phone in my room. I do use it as my alarm. I don't know if you trained myself for how to sleep this hard. The only part of it that wakes me up is if it rings, if the phone actually rings. I get text messages in the middle of the night, and people are like, did you not get this? I'm like,
I was asleep. Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. I'll text you at 6 in the, in the morning when I get up. But if you text me at 1:15, I'm not going to see it. I mean, I'm not going to hear it. It doesn't wake me up. But kids are sleeping with their phones right beside their ear because if someone texts them at 2:12 in the morning, they feel like they have to respond. Like, no, you need rest. And I love that she puts that on there. It's people sometimes you know who are, invading your home. They're coming in without invitation.
Well, I was just thinking, what you were just saying, if you think about it, if adults have trouble knowing when you should just leave someone alone for a while, like at 2 o'clock in the morning, then are we silly to think that children are not going to know the limit of saying, you know what, I can tell them this tomorrow at school? Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just,
I can send the same text at 7 in the morning I can send at 2:15.
You know, I still remember, okay, and this is a problem that's just magnified by having a phone with you all the time, but I still remember in college entering the phone. It was 2 o'clock in the morning and 2 or 3, and this guy on the phone was wanting to talk to my roommate. about, I don't even know what it was. I don't even think I asked. All I said was, it is 2 o'clock in the morning, and I hung up.
I can hear you saying that.
And I thought, and then I thought, this is crazy. I want to say he called back, or maybe I just hung up the first time. And then he, but I thought, this is, you, she couldn't even leave the dorm. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Freed Hardman has right. pretty strict curfew rules. At least they did at our time back there, you know, back in the olden days.
It's still that strict, you know, 2 a.m.
You couldn't just leave the dorm like, oh, I have this and I need to get it over there to you. I mean, we're talking like this was a guy in a men's dorm, in the men's dorm that she couldn't have seen anyway. And it was something about like something he was supposed to get from her. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, that's just one example of how irritated I was.
And that was before smartphone days.
That's what I mean. Yeah. That was just on a regular phone.
Yeah.
That he just like, I'm up. I'm sure everybody else doesn't, you know, go to sleep and need their rest either.
And I know there are people who struggle to sleep and that sort of thing. But you know, I'm amazed. So I'm not talking about everybody. We have dear friends. We have family members who struggle to sleep. And sometimes they're up in the middle of the night or whatever. But, you know, they're not texting people at 3 in the morning. But I'm amazed. I get up most every morning at 6 o'clock and, you know, get ready to walk and things. And while I'm getting ready, sometimes I'll scroll through. Well, when I put the blog articles and stuff, I'll scroll through Facebook or something. And I am amazed at how many people I'll see stuff that they've posted and it's like 2 hours ago or 4 hours ago. I'm thinking, that's 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing? And I know, again, some people struggle to sleep. I know some of those people, but I'm thinking,
Not
all those people struggle to sleep. I'm thinking they just were either up or someone woke them up, and they're like, "Well, I'm awake. I guess I'll jump on Facebook or jump on Twitter." And I think, go back to bed.
You know, I think this is where,
but it's multiplied again when you're a child and you need to be developing patterns for your life, patterns and so forth.
And I think beyond just sleep, and you know that's kind of what we're focusing on now, but just this idea of having the time that you're not always having to be at everyone else's beck and call. And now we've developed this phone etiquette that says it's almost wrong if you don't respond. And you're thinking, there was a time where if you didn't catch someone at a convenient time for them, you just had to be patient yourself
at home.
Right.
Because they weren't cell phones.
And, you know, there's just this attitude like, oh, did you not get my text? And I'm like, well, maybe I did. And maybe I had something else to do.
That's remarkable to me is when and there are times where, you know, I've texted you or something with something, somewhat important. I'm like, you know, I'll text you. Did you get that?
I know.
But it's remarkable though how many people live that way.
Right.
Like they send a text and if you don't respond in a minute, did you get that? I'm like,
or they call.
And I don't mean crass here, but like, yes, but I was using the restroom.
Right.
You know, or I was taking a shower.
Or maybe that is your personal Bible study time and you're taking half an hour for that. Or maybe you are trying not to live with your phone so that your mind can calm itself. And I think people just do. I mean, this is just a soapbox with me because it's like, you know, because I see the struggle in myself so much more since I've been in the Facebook world, which I used to just openly disdain and wouldn't care, and then had to be in a group where they insisted that you had a Facebook account. For a homeschool co-op, one of them that I was in. And I'm thinking, and now...
now you disdain it for another reason.
Yes, because it's just like, I do not like this constant stream of information coming, and then I don't like how it makes me feel that I have a problem with just saying I'm done with it because I'm like, I'm going to miss out on everything. I won't know what's going on. I remember those days where I just didn't know everything
I won't know
everybody
else
did.
I don't know what my own kids look like. But all right, let's circle this back around here. We're about
I know. We always say, well, we're going to talk that long.
Yeah. But let's circle this back around here. Let's bring this back to, you know, raising children. Let's try to give 2 or 3 just words of encouragement or practical tips here of swimming upstream, whether we make it about phones or make it about just anything else. You know, just 2 or 3 things. I think we've mentioned one is to communicate the why. It's not just a constant we don't do this or we don't watch that. It's a why.
Being intentional.
I think another when it does come to things like phones and stuff, you've mentioned it, is our life is God's life, but God has entrusted my life with me, not to everybody else. So yes, I'm going to be a servant, but being a servant does not mean that I have to be, like you said a minute ago, at everyone else's beck and call, for no other reason. That's completely unhealthy and it's bad stewardship.
And can you not say if I can have just like a few more seconds
to
say, can you not?
We're on podcast. We're on time.
Can you not say that this is something? It's another personal thing with me that we need to be servants. You just brought up something I always think about, but we need to be servants and try to keep up with people's lives, and we need to try to be there for them. But I mean, the social media not open up? Like, it's almost like, did God really expect us to have that many things to think and care and pray about even? It's almost sometimes like, if I hear of one more person, I mean, this is going to sound awful, but it's like, if you hear of one more person that's going through some family crisis and you've already trying to carry the burden for people you know and love yourself already, and then there's another, to me, it's like, can we not see how that can be damaging just to the human spirit?
No, I know what you mean.
There's only so much you can handle with before. That's why so many people get depressed. And it's highly related to social media, not just with teenagers. It's like it's constantly negative, whether we want to admit it or not. And I don't think God intended for us. We can't care for everyone in our congregation, our community, and also everyone else over there in the other state. But, you know, like I hope this is coming out right. But sometimes I think
people understand that.
We need to say it's enough. What I'm focusing on is enough, you know, and it's okay that. Maybe like what I was saying earlier, that so like if you just decide you're not going to be so much on social media or whatever, and you don't know what's going on with these people that you don't get to see very often, and you're out of the loop, then that might not be all. It might not always be a bad thing. Maybe you can focus more on your family's needs or your congregation's needs and build better relationships there, instead of thinking you can be there for everyone.
Well, and even,
that you've ever known,
and even that, going back to raising kids, you know, I think what you said is true. I think you know, if you are on social media and you see someone with a prayer request, it's a good thing to do your best to, you know, to pray for those things. But there again, you're raising kids who are going upstream or going against the flow. Which stands out more? And I don't say stands out. That's not the right way of putting it. But is it important to pray? Yes. But which is going to make a bigger impact in a person's life over time? Is it the person who just comments, "I'm praying for you," on everybody's Facebook post on the face of the earth? Or is it the 15-year-old girl who, you know, walks five doors down and delivers a meal to a widow?
Right.
You know, that she knows, that goes to church with her, or just lives in the community, lives in the neighborhood, and that sort of thing. Are both important? Yes. I'm not trying to take away, because I know a person I'm thinking of right now who is bedfast. Her, if you please, ministry is getting on social media,
well,
seeing prayer requests,
right,
and praying.
And that's why no one wants to make a blanket statement.
Right.
And we're not doing that at all.
But,
I know,
but, you know, if you want to raise kids who are going against the flow, get them off of social media and get them on their bike taking a loaf of bread to somebody down the street.
Right.
Or going up to the church building and helping with Bible school materials.
Or reading a book and being intelligent about something. Yeah. Instead of like, I have no idea what that is, but I can tell you all the cool things on social media, you know?
Right.
I mean,
so that's against the flow big time.
Right.
Anything else you want to say?
No, I think we've covered this particular.
Who you got in your bracket?
Oh, are you really asking me?
Have you seen a bracket?
On social media.
See,
that people have answered.
See, I gave you an easy out there if you would have just turned your brain on for a second. The easy answer is UConn's women. I mean, you know, that's the easy. I was, you know, I didn't say it had to be the men's tournament because I. All right, so the links to the couple of articles we have talked about will be in the show notes. Those can be found at fawnfamily.com/POD101, fawnfamily.com/POD101. I honestly do not know where our next episode will come out because of Lad Sawyer's. We're going to have to do some talking and planning. And
it may be after.
It may be after. It may be before.
Let's
maybe
just be real.
Yeah. So be expecting an episode. Let's just say being expecting an episode within the next 3 weeks. How about that? Is that fair? We may do one a week early. They may record one early and let it come out a different time. So that's going to be played by ear. But let's just say within 3 weeks, we will have another episode released from the podcast. But we appreciate everybody for listening. We appreciate the comments. If you subscribe and share and those sorts of things, we really do appreciate it. And remember, until next time, your family can go to heaven. Just make sure you go there together.